I'm speaking with film composer Leslie Barber. How are you, Leslie?
Pretty good, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Now that we're finally talking, there's been a little bit of glitches getting it together. Bi-coastal, I understand that you're speaking from Canada today.
And yes, I am. I just finished a score here in Toronto.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I really enjoy working in L.A. and staying there and hanging out there, and also do work in Canada as well.
Today I'd like to talk about the work that you did for Manchester by the Sea. The music that you wrote was just, from the opening credits with your vocal music, was just astonishing, just beautiful.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot. And it takes people on a real journey. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I've been hearing from friends seeing it for the first time.
I think so, you know, and the main thrust of it and what your score did was seem to capture the third person underlying the state of mind of the film and all the people that were involved, which I thought was just fantastic. One of the things that I took note of when I was listening was the adagio form. I know that Albinoni had a piece in there also, the adagio. And
yeah,
it's very richly chromatic. And I thought, did Leslie use that piece of music as a temp track?
Oh, that's so interesting that you say that, because when I first looked at the project with Kenny, it was our second project that we'd worked on. You know, I scored You Can Count on Me as well, and so I know how Kenny works, and I knew that he would want some classical music and maybe some blues standards and some interesting choices in there, and that my score would need to work hand in hand with the classical music. And quite often for a composer, you walk into a project and you're not sure what those classical pieces are going to be, or those pop pieces, because there'll be a music supervisor who's helping the director know their options on the music that's going to be from outside the film and outside the score. But with Kenny, I just imagine that there would be some there'd be some sort of posts in the film, or that these pieces would be hung on, these classical pieces. And so from the get-go, I sort of wanted to write music that would sort of gather energy and power, taking those pieces into consideration, rather than sort of skipping over those parts and thinking, well, I'm not sure what's going to be there, but I'm writing the score independently. So I felt like there was a collaboration with some of the classical music, at least in my mind, from an intuitive level, and to try to build a score that's sort of unified and gathered energy, not only from itself thematically, but also from some of Kenny's choices for those classical pieces. I was introduced to the project with a script and read the script, and I had the luxury of some time when I could just sit at the piano and just sort of intuit my way through what might work. And some of the music I came up with in the first few weeks was the pieces that ended up in the film. So I wrote a little suite for him of themes. I just sat down at the piano and wrote a theme that became, well, sometimes it's called Lee's theme. It's on the soundtrack. It's called Minimalist Theme in G minor, but it was sort of a theme that was for piano and strings. And then I also had this idea of working with the a cappella voices, and had this idea of Lee starting over, and this idea of the setting, which is a small Massachusetts town, and the idea of the Puritans and Pilgrims sort of starting over there,
nice.
and what that place is about, that sort of ancient concept of having been traumatized or distanced, or having to sort of negotiate a new beginning. And I looked at some of the music of the, you know, of this Puritan Pilgrim first settlement, got just this idea that what would it be like to have like one singer sing kind of loops and a music that could go on to infinity, that had some of the stoicism of some of those early pieces. So you know, I just sort of had that idea and didn't even know really why or how, and decided one night to record some music and enlisted the singer who multi-tracked it, who just happens to be my daughter, and sent it off to Kenny, and he loved it, and it was working really well with pictures, so we knew that we had something there to start with.
Oh, yeah. That's beautiful.
As a building block.
Oh, what an incredible story. That's great. But now, did you use your daughter as the temp, or was that her on the actual recording and in the movie?
Well, it's quite funny because she was I think 19 when we did this, and she has a lovely voice. She's studying opera at McGill University, and she was in her dorm room, and I just had this idea in the middle of the night, and I texted her and I got an engineer friend to find another engineer in Montreal who could bring over a really professional kind of microphone and amplifier. Mm-hmm. I knew what kind of amplifier and setup I wanted. And she recorded in her dorm room this sort of demo because I wanted to send it to Kenny. And I didn't want to send it as a piano sketch. I wanted to send it as something relatable and that we could really... here, you know, I like to do demos that are beautiful mm-hmm. demos whenever I can, rather than just kind of like try to imagine. So I called her, and between classes, I think, you know, we set up this beautiful little setting, but in her dorm room, and we recorded the demos. And actually, there was something so wonderful about those first demos that actually they're in the film. I think because she was trying to stay a little bit quiet and there's this wonderful intimacy to her voice. She's multi-tracking all of it. And the other thing I really decided to do is work with her breaths, which I captured on tape, and which another engineer in the mix might have tried to get rid of all the little sounds. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, working in radio, that, you know, the engineers quite often want to get rid of all that superfluous sound. But in this case, we kept it all in, and it added this incredible intimacy and up-close quality to her voice in, I think it's in about three times or, you know, maybe five times, that mm-hmm. particular recording. That was the very first thing I did about uh-huh. a week in. And then we took the idea and we expanded it. And so for the opening sequence, for instance, where it's a very vast landscape, and we have the sea, and we see a little, you know, we see a boat.
Oh, yeah.
The ocean.
What an opening.
For that, I recorded in a large concert hall mm-hmm. because I wanted to just get this idea of an infinite space.
Mm-hmm. And it did that,
so
too.
So there's sort of two different spaces. There's sort of like the inside your head, intimate, up-close space, and then there's the vast. Infinite. I was trying to look for some neutrality, but beauty. And Kenny described it as, you know, sort of having the sky in every shot regardless of what was going on for Lee, that the world sort of kept moving on and fate sort of was unfolding as it does.
Mm-hmm. What other sort of prompts did he give you to guide your composing?
Part of it was us just having a creative conversation where I would write some music and send it to him, and he would send me music that he was sort of thinking of. And a few times we would get together in the editing suite as well, and we would just try different things, and we would look at why certain things weren't working and and why a choice wasn't working, and then decide, like, really look at the emotionality of that, and like what was untruthful in that choice. Because with, you know, with Kenny's filmmaking, with his writing, there's really nowhere to hide. You have to really hit the right notes. That was one of the conversations we would have after I would send him ideas, because I sent him actually quite a bit of music that didn't work as well, and that's always interesting to see why. And sometimes it's because the themes are just redundant with something that's already there. So you're looking for something that isn't there. You're looking at things that are unspoken. So yeah, we did talk about using classical instrumentation, and that felt good to me as well, to use instruments that would blend and unify with the classical choices.
Mm-hmm.
And we also, I knew with Kenny that we wouldn't do anything that was what I would call conventional narrative scoring.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's nothing, as soon as, like, for instance, there's a part in film, maybe you remember it, where Lee looks for a job, and I would imagine if I was in a spotting session with some other directors, they would be like, okay, well, this is the looking for work montage.
Right.
They sort of, you know, come up with this looking for work montage.
Yeah, right.
And not with Kenny. I was looking for something that wasn't there, and something, a counterpoint. A lot of it is counterpoint.
Well, it's nice that that both of you were open to the risk of, you know, stepping out of convention a little bit. One of the things in the movie that I kind of wanted to hear more of your music, but it would go away. And this is what happens, I guess, in all movies. But we hear these fragments of the score, and they kind of function as a teaser to the actual soundtrack release. And then when you go out and you get the soundtrack, you get to hear the whole thing uncut, which is a completely different experience, too.
Thanks. I was so pleased when Milan decided to do the soundtrack, and so was Kenny, that we could unfold all the ideas and let them breathe and have, you know, as you say, the full unedited score there for everyone to hear.
Now, I understand that you also do a lot of other genres, even electronic. I mean, is that true?
Completely, yeah. I started off writing very hybrid music that was, you know, like beats and electronica. And then because I'm classically trained and I love strings and piano and orchestral instruments, I would mix it all up and for every score, just go into it and see, you know, who are these characters? What is the music they listen to when they're in the car? And what's the music they hear in their head? You know, what's their personal music that we can't hear? So, you know, it's coming up with that really special, specific language to a specific project. And then I did a lot of scores where directors were interested in my string writing. Actually, the last two or three projects I've done this year, there was a lot of programming involved. And the last one is extremely, I would call it sort of Icelandic techno, because it's got a lot of beats in it, and then it also has I use a small quartet, but they never really play the actual notes of the strings. They play only the air that the string would create without the tone.
Interesting. Yeah.
So that took a long time to put together, but I'm thrilled with the result. I just finished mixing it last night. And I'm just about to do a horror film, and it will involve a lot of very lush, warm electronic, like kind of beats and like cool loops and things.
Ooh, and orchestra as well. I want to hear that.
It's always fun. It's fun to do these different projects and figure out what the specific fit is for that film that'll just take it to a new place.
Would you say that this is more of an individual effort, or does it involve collaboration with other composers or performers?
Well, I tend to want to write everything in a very personal way myself. And then, depending on the project, I do, the collaboration with performers is key. And depending on the project and the scope, it could be anything from an orchestra in London to I've designed my house, redesigned it so that I can have the whole first floor as a studio, and I can do some really lovely sessions here with or some small chamber string, any kind of other singer, drums, anything. I just did one the other night. It was super fun. I had the house was full of musicians, and I'd written the music and then conducted it here. So I like to look at it as a sort of, like it's a really agile approach, I think.
Good word, yeah.
There's always a level of sort of guerrilla recording sometimes involved with smaller projects. It's super fun. And for the bigger ones, it's great to travel to different cities and work with different orchestras and choose the right orchestra and the right players for the right project.
Can we always identify a Leslie Barber sound? Even traversing all those different genres.
I think kind of. I mean, people say that for sure. I mean, I guess it's not unlike being a character actor, and that you know, it's you're hiring Meryl Streep, but you're seeing different language that she's using and different language of character. And a composer for film is a storyteller, and it's all about story and. But the language that we're using is music, so it's that deep empathy and identity with characters and with the script, and trying to figure out what's at stake for the characters and getting it right inside each piece, and then these ideas just seem to they do reveal themselves. It's not like going into it and thinking, oh, I'm going to do techno with this with that. Sometimes just seems like the right fit to go into a new direction with each piece.
Right. What?
Not always a completely new direction, because there's always some similarity in style. People know what kind of score they're going to get, you know, but it's just different vehicles, I guess, for the storytelling part of it. But,
yeah. What would you say is the common thread that runs through all of your different writing? I mean, what makes Leslie Barber Leslie Barber's sound?
Well, I do tend to compose quite deliberately, and I really look at the voice, the kind of the harmonic language, and I look at the harmonic progressions. I do take a long time to just get the right progression, and I've been told that there is a style to that, and I tend to share the melody. I tend to not have like a melody that reveals itself with harmonies that kind of chug along underneath. The whole structure is a mixture of harmony and melody, and actually last night when we were mixing, it was like the line will lead up, but during the phraseology of the clarinet, it could be that the violin plays half of it, and then there's a pizzicato, and then there's some piano. But if you put all those, the DNA of the melodic structure together, you get the melody. That's something I really enjoy doing, that seems part of a, it's part of an approach to cinematic language that works with picture and with characters, because there's so many shared components to the storytelling that sometimes I find one melody and one instrument isn't the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I love when I see someone like John Williams do it so masterfully. But it's interesting. I'm watching different composers handle melody in cinematic writing is really curious to me.
Uh-huh. But would you be able to say, if you were given kind of a blindfold test of different composers and your music came up, would you be able to identify it, you think? I mean, I know you'll do a lot
know.
Of different things.
I guess I have to lose my memory and then try that. But although there has been a few times where I've forgotten something that I've written, and it's always interesting to be like, that sounds familiar.
But
there is something that carries across, I think.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think about it too much. I just sort of enjoy moving on and seeing the new direction where it's taking me.
What would you say is probably the most important part of film composition? I mean, is it like timing or pacing?
I think it's all about story.
Uh-huh.
I think, a composer, a film composer is a dramatist to some extent. And it's getting inside the depth of a character and all the characters and figuring out in each scene, you know, what their intentions are, and the more inside in the storytelling you are, and the more the emotion of your music is in counterpoint with the characters, revealing an honesty or an emotional truth of some sort. That's where the strength in the score comes from, I think, and. It's sometimes you hear music and it just sounds like it's outside the film, and other times it's just deeply inside. And that's what I'm kind of looking for, and what I admire in other composers' work, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've mentioned the word honesty a couple of times, and I think that's such a great model to use, you know, especially for the audience members. Can really sense that, I think. There's a sense, just as there's a sense of honesty in the actors acting, I think the same thing applies for the music, and I really appreciate you bringing that out, too.
Yeah, and it's also kind of finding that really unique sound and palette. When you think of John Barry's score for Goldfinger, or you think of Chariot to Fire, or Curtis Mayfield with Superfly, or recent scores like Mika Levy's really cool score for Jackie, or Britell's score for Moonlight. I just watched The Handmaiden the other day, and a really fantastic score that just comes from another world. It's in each case sort of a hybrid, and is particular to that particular film, and that's that's something that's unique to writing for film, that gives a composer a really great opportunity, you know. And it's super fun.
Oh, yeah. Those are all great examples you mentioned, by the way. I haven't heard Mika Levi's score to Jackie yet. That's probably the only one I haven't heard of hers yet, but I'm anxious to hear that. So have you written any period music?
Not in that I've done what I guess the British school would call like pastiche, but I've written music for films set in the past, like Mansfield Park, for instance, that's based on the Jane Austen. But in that case, I really tried to take some qualities of the era, but really mix it up and help the score to feel really contemporary. And in each case, you know, I want the vehicle to be really contemporary, but I want there to be some resonance of or nostalgic connective tissue with the music of the time.
Now, how did you get into film composing? I mean, what kind of a teenager were you like? If that's where it started, or earlier or later?
I grew up on a farm. There was a lot of music in the family. My parents were, I don't want to say they were hippies, but they weren't, they wanted to live out and kind of grow our own food and do our own thing. And There was a great, you know, I had a really wonderful piano that my dad's family, they were all really fabulous amateur musicians. And I learned how to play just from family members who could show me some Chopin, but also show me some Beatles and show me everything. And also when I started to show, I just started improvising a lot for hours on end, actually, and was shown how to notate my ideas in very simple ways, so I could remember them and build on them and develop them. And anyway, shortcut to being a teenager, I was in like punk bands and all kinds of crazy things. It was all very kind of Wes Anderson in the country. And then I did my master's degree, I guess in my early 20s, and I needed a job and started working in a theater. And it was a wonderful theater in Toronto, with great new productions being done. And some of the directors started hearing my music because I was doing a master's degree, and I was obsessed with composing. So I had a lot of music and I was constantly playing it for people. And I started writing for plays, and some of the directors and playwrights I worked with are really some of the best. And so I learned from some amazing people in those early years. And filmmakers started hearing my scores at theaters and asking me to score their films. And then when I started writing for film, I thought, wow, this is great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the time pressure involved, and the people that I was working with were, and still are, fantastic. And it gave me this ability to get right inside story and write some really interesting music that interested me. So it was a niche, it's like I found my niche, I guess, when I started working in film.
Now, was this the type of thing that would make you nervous to get into? I mean, at this point in your career, I'm sure you're just like, yeah, let's do it, you know? But at one point, I mean, Are you the kind of artist that can switch to the creative mode easily, or does it take some time for you to make that transition, you know, like writer's block type of stuff?
No, knock on wood. I really love to jump right in. And the technology involved is thrilling to me, putting together studios and maxing out my computer and my software. And I have, you know, all the, my piano, you know, direct, everything is suited to writing to picture. And so the entire world of it was, it's still, I find, really intriguing. And it's really exciting to get a script or a film and just dive in.
Say that film composers today are people that are getting into it. It's kind of an essential thing to know technology, mixing boards, computers, and that sort of thing, or is that not absolutely necessary?
Well, I would imagine that looking at who's composing for films these days, that there's sort of a couple of different approaches, and one is, you know, if you have a band or you are a player that has a really extremely unique sound that a director is aware of, that, you know, you could probably work through an editor or something and come up with a very interesting score. But I think if you're going to be working on a variety of projects over a year or over many years, that the ability to communicate with the entire team is essential to it, and so the whole technology studio aspect of it is crucial. It's crucial, and it should be. It has to be at the point of being really super feel inevitable and easy, so that it's not in the way. You know?
Are you involved in the sound mixing at all, or is that a completely different person?
The music mix is. I do, you know, I oversee everything right to the music mix. And then when the music leaves my care and ends up at the mixing stage, it's really great to be part of that process as well.
Oh, I bet.
I'm not always, but yeah, because that's when the sound designer is also come in and brought all kinds of new ideas. And tones and room tones and ambiences to the whole world of sound. So having a dialogue with that person can be really crucial, especially for some, you know, anything that's sort of sci-fi or that has a huge sound component. So I love it when it happens. It doesn't always happen, but it's great when it does.
I would imagine. You know, I mean, after all, you've got the dialogue, you've got the score, you've got the sound effects, and as you so brilliantly pointed out, the whole space of the sound as well. Issue that I have had a question about, and that is, where are more women composers in film scoring? Is there a reason for that, or I'm just curious. I mean, I know there's some incredible women out there composing, but when you look at the numbers compared to the men composing, there's a huge gap or inconsistency, and I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I wasn't aware of the statistics, so I started, about a year ago, I guess, I started getting involved with the Alliance of Women Film Composers in L.A. And
is that with Laura Karpman? Okay, cool.
She's amazing. Yeah. And also was invited to join the Academy and be on the executive branch there. And it was kind of shocking to realize how few of us are scoring films and scoring studio films. It would be interesting to figure out why. It could be just an unconscious bias and a sort of limited thinking. That seems to be expanding and really rapidly right now. It's like the conversation has started. We're seeing more and more women involved in scoring, and it's only a matter of time, I think, before we start to see more women scoring films. And it's really a broader question of diversity, because if you look at, it's not only just the women that are perhaps missing in the room, but if you look at who are the composers on various panels and listed as composers, there is a sort of uniformity of image or voice, and opening up the conversation. And I do see some really big shifts this year, also in the kind of film scores that were done this year, which, as I mentioned before, did seem to depart from a certain kind of conventional narrative scoring style. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, looking at that it's really in the best interest of filmmakers and producers to start looking a little deeper into that, because when you see the effect all this kind of diversity and freshness is having for changing sort of the conventions of cinematic language, it gets really exciting. I think we're going in the right direction for sure.
I hope so, because it just seems like a real missed opportunity, you know?
Yeah.
Then what are you working on now? What's upcoming with Leslie Barber?
Well, I just finished two films in December. Well, I just finished the last one last night, but I did, it was really super fun for something completely different. I did a remake of Beaches with Allison Anders directing, and that was really super fun.
Oh, nice.
It was I'm sure you remember the Bette Midler film.
Oh yeah, of course.
So it's a remake, and so it was great working on that project.
Oh, nice.
And then I just finished a score last night, as I mentioned. I keep repeating that, I think, because I'm so excited. Got it done time for the mix. We had a short turnaround on that one, and I was just thrilled when we got it all in place. And it's a documentary. Executive produced by Sarah Pauley, and is a extremely interesting exploration of. It's about a woman who kind of keeps running into on the street a guy that she dated in high school, and who actually assaulted her in high school when they were in a relationship, and she gets together with him and asks if over a series of get-togethers, if he and she can explore what happened in that abusive relationship, which was quite a serious abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beautifully shot. It's riveting material.
Mm.
And I think that I don't do a lot of docs, and this one I wanted to do immediately when I saw it. It just seemed like a film that I've never seen before, and that is super interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting angle on this material. So I finished that, and now next week I'm just digging into a really interesting horror film that I can't wait to dig into.
Well, it seems like horror films and science fiction have the doors wide open for a lot of experimentation, I've noticed.
Definitely, yeah.
That should give you a lot of material to work with.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite genre to work in?
No, I don't, actually. I have done a couple of psychological horrors and found them really interesting. Mm-hmm. It would be super fun to do something like Blade Runner or something that sort of, you know, that it's really interesting to do projects that kind of have some sort of a hybrid approach and really great storytelling. So yeah, it's just project by project and finding just the right fit.
Well, I am speaking with Leslie Barber, film composer for Manchester by the Sea, and I could go on and on talking, but I know you've got other things in life to do besides talk with me, but I just really want to reiterate how much I enjoyed the music that you did for Manchester by the Sea. There was just the right amount of redemption, you know, from keeping it morbidly existential. And I, for one, appreciate that. In other words, when the movie was over, I had felt that there was closure to some degree, and that the music, your music, just really assisted in gluing the whole story and the characters together. And I think you did a wonderful job. And from what I've heard other people talk, there's a lot of agreement about that. And I look forward to listening to more of your music as it becomes available. All righty, Leslie. Well, thank you very much, and I wish
Thanks
you the...
a lot.
You're welcome, and I wish you the very best in all your future projects.
Great. Thanks again, Tom.